Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and well, hopefully not good night to all of you out there in internet land. We've been doing the book of Daniel, and we are in chapter 3 today. And chapter 3 is like, it's a well-known and well-loved chapter in the Bible. I mean, it contains things that we all like in a story. It's got a 90-foot idol, a furious king, a fiery furnace, people getting thrown alive into the fiery furnace by the furious king, that sort of thing. Just your basic everyday life down in Babylon 2,600 years ago. When we left our friends at the end of chapter 2, everything was going along very nicely, thank you very much. With Daniel and his three amigos, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, exalted to a position of privilege and power in Babylon. But unfortunately, things have a habit of changing in this life, and so they will for our friends stranded in Babylon. You see, King Nebuchadnezzar has set up a golden image that is 90 foot high and 9 foot wide. And what's worse, everyone is commanded to bow down and worship this image. Not great. Now, what can we take from a passage like this? We can take it both personally and prophetically. And while we're going to do both, I'll focus more on the former. But there are some really interesting prophetic implications in this chapter that will definitely be noted. So we're going to explore the following today. Firstly, the image. What prompted the king to make a golden image that had to be worshipped, and how is this a prophetic pointer to the last days? Secondly, the furnace. As we live in changing times, how do we respond when under fire? And what gave our three amigos such tremendous courage to defy the king? And then the fourth man. Who is this one that will be seen in the furnace? And what does it point to, both personally and prophetically? And then the outcome. What impact did this event have on the king? And what can the world also learn when it sees believers respond to trials? So let's begin by reading the first 7 verses in Daniel chapter 3. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide, and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisers, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisers, treasurers, judges, and magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O peoples, nations, and men of every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing fire." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So, King Nebuchadnezzar, he makes this image of gold, and it's no small undertaking. I mean, this thing is 30 meters high. So the first question is, where do you think he got this idea from? While the Bible doesn't say exactly what the image was of, most commentators believe that the image was inspired by the vision and the dream that he had had in chapter 2, and that he created an image of a man. It could well have been his own image. The Bible also states it was all in gold, and you may remember from chapter 2 that in the dream of the statue that he had, he was the head of gold. but he also learned that this head of gold would come to an end. So it's therefore likely that the king had this image set up entirely in gold to indicate that his Babylonian empire would never perish or never be conquered. While we don't know for sure, knowing the pride of Nebuchadnezzar, it's quite likely. So the king gathers all his leaders in preparation for some grand dedication. Obviously, something huge is on the way. What was coming is an event that will change the lives of all Jews exiled in Babylon. I mean, they had faced indoctrination before, but not outright persecution for their religious beliefs. Yet this governmental decree would put their faith in the true God directly in the crosshairs of a king demanding worship. And we should also note the extent of this decree. Whatever is happening here with this proclamation and decree, it's going to affect all peoples, men of every nation and language. Everyone is going to be put on the spot. Will you bow down or not? So what do you do in such a situation? Do you obey the king? Do you go with these new laws of the land? What about if bowing down and worshipping this image is a violation of your own faith? And what of the alternative? What was it the king said again? Whoever does not fall down and worship will be immediately thrown into the blazing fire. It's fair to say that these were challenging days. But we have an application for today as well, because Christians in persecuted countries have faced these questions really since the time of Christ. But in the West, it's really a fairly recent development where the laws of the land can come into contact with the laws of God. When I first wrote my study on Daniel, which was around 2019, things were beginning to change for Christians in certain areas of employment, especially those associated with marriage, like florists, cake makers, signed marriage licenses, you know, all those officiating in the ceremony, where they had to decide whether they would participate in LGBT marriages or not. And at the time, many declined and were heavily fined and faced public persecution and ridicule for not doing so. Some lost their businesses. Since then, things have changed a lot in the West, and to be honest, not for the better. Today, our leaders pass so-called hate speech laws. The Bible has even been called hate speech. We now live in an age where the terms mother and father are even getting banned in some circles, and most of our leaders struggle to even define what a woman is. As an example of the days in which we live, there was an image which I've got in the written study of a recent protest in the United States. And in it, you can see the signs. There's all sorts of signs. Some of them say, full LGBTQ equality now. Other signs say, free Palestine. Another sign says, free abortion on demand. Or globalize the intifada. Fight the US war machine. Well, good luck being LGBTQ or demanding abortion on demand in any Palestinian or Muslim country. Amir Safadi commented on this image and he just says, Satan is having a big smile. It's his perfect agenda. He hates the life of the unborn. He hates family. He hates Israel. He hates all that God loves and loves all that God hates. So yep, the times certainly are a-changing. Eventually we will all, more and more, be put on the spot about our values and beliefs that we hold and whether they will influence the decisions we make. Will we just go with the flow of the world's opinions or follow our faith? Let's carry on in Daniel and have a look at verses 8 to 15. It says, at this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. And then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand?" So what do you do? You've been led into captivity to a foreign country, and suddenly the king, whose favorite saying is that he will tear you limb from limb and turn your house into rubble, is commanding that you fall down and worship this golden, oversized monstrosity. You know that to do so is going to break God's law to have no other gods or idols before him. There are times when Christians have to disobey the law of the land, when it goes against what has been commanded by God. There are times, in the words of the Apostle Peter, that we must obey God and not men. And you'll also note how quickly this change came. One minute our three friends were working as administrators over Babylonian provinces, and the next their lives are on the line. So this should be a warning for all of us not ever to be too comfortable. Now, there are some really interesting prophetic pointers in this chapter, because it's not just historical. It's actually prophetic of what conditions will be like in the last days. So let's just have a look at seven sort of points, seven clues that point to what is to come. Firstly, in this chapter, we've seen that you have the mad dictator king. So, prophetically, just as it was in the days of Daniel, in the last days, a total dictator will arise that will demand worship. That's 2 Thessalonians 2, 3-4. Secondly, the image that all have to bow down and worship. In the last days, an image will be made that everyone has to worship, according to Revelation 13:13-15. Thirdly, the size of the image. The image Nebuchadnezzar constructed is 60 cubits by 6 cubits. 6 is the number of man, and so this points to the infamous 666 that's coming in the last days. Again, that's Revelation 13:16-18. Fourthly, there's a clue from the result of not bowing down, because in the last days, people will again be killed for not bowing down to this king's image. That's Revelation 13:15. Fifthly, the music from all nations. Just as in Daniel, in the last days, the decree to worship the Antichrist will go out to everyone. No one will be exempt. It's Revelation 13:8. Sixthly, there's a clue from the faith of the Jewish men, because just as in Daniel, in the last days, there will be Jewish believers who do not comply and are sovereignly protected by God. That's Revelation 7:2-4. And seventhly, there's even a clue in the absence of Daniel. It is curious and interesting that Daniel himself is totally missing from this chapter. He's just not mentioned at all. And in like manner, in the last days, true age believers, church age believers, will be missing, for they will be raptured before the tribulation. It's Revelation 3:10. So we've left our three friends with quite a decision to make. The horns of a dilemma, you might say. Just to recap, the king, without a hint of a smile on his face, has just challenged them, saying, if you do not worship this image, you'll be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what god will be able to rescue you from my hand? So it seems that the king has already forgotten about the God of Daniel and his friends that he was introduced to in chapter 2. So here's the moment of choice for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. How will they respond? Let's have a look, verses 16 to 18. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, then God, the God we serve, is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Wow. Talk about coming out swinging. I mean, they start by telling the king that they don't even need to answer him. I'm not sure that is found in the How to Win Kings and Influence Monarchs manual. And I doubt that the king has heard or was even ready for such a reply. I mean, he's used to the normal pleading and groveling and begging. Oh, king, please. But this is something totally different. This is faith. It's clear that having committed themselves to the God of Israel, God is now committing himself to them, and he's supplying the boldness and the strength to stand and even defy the king. It's quite good now, just as an application, just to highlight commitment, because commitment is becoming a rare quality in this age, especially in the West. Especially this type of commitment that places no conditions on God whatsoever. I mean, we tend to give in and give up. This happens in jobs, marriages, faith, and even our lives, sadly. Even Christians can sometimes believe that God primarily exists for their benefit, that he exists to bless them. No, we exist for his pleasure. And so our three friends placed no such conditions on God. Deliverance or not, God is good and worth obeying. And God honored that and gave them what they needed at the right time. I've probably told this story before, but I always like it. When Corrie ten Boom was afraid as a small girl that she would not have the courage to put her faith on the line for Jesus, her godly father simply said to her, Corrie, when we take the train to Amsterdam, when do I give you the money for the ticket? 3 weeks early? No, I won't give you the money until we approach the ticket office. And so it is with God. He provides the strength we need at the time we need it. I like that. And that's how it was for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were committed to the God of Israel, no matter what, and were given what was needed when it was needed. And what an amazing testimony they gave. Because you would think that they would fall somewhat silent as they contemplated how to respond to such a threat. But they spoke immediately, crystal clear in their firm resolve and faith. I mean, it's one thing to think that we will be strong in such a time. It's another to actually do it. Peter told Jesus that even if all deserted him, he never would. Such a great speech. Yet at the moment of testing, he even had to lie to a small girl saying that he didn't know Jesus. The moral of the story is that We should never have such great pride and confidence in ourselves, but rely on God to give what is needed in such times. That's the answer to the confidence that our three friends exhibited. But notice also that they weren't afraid to say that God can deliver, but if not, that's fine also. It doesn't change our stance. We won't bow down. There's some today that think that this is not faith. They think that faith is declaring what's going to happen always in the positive. No, that's the false word of faith movement. That is psychology's positive thinking, not biblical faith. Biblical faith believes and trusts in the goodness of God no matter what the outcome, but always leaves room for his will. The "but if not" was exactly what Jesus expressed in his time of extreme difficulty when he said, "My Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me, but nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." Our Daily Bread actually gives the following illustration and application concerning this. It says, when Polycarp, and he lived from 69 AD to 155 AD, who was bishop of the church of Smyrna, was asked by Roman authorities to curse Christ if he wanted to be released, he said, 86 years I have served him, and he never did me any wrong. How can I blaspheme my king who saved me? And the Roman officer threatened, if you do not change your mind, I will have you consumed with fire. And Polycarp remained undaunted. Because he would not curse Christ, he was burned at the stake. Centuries earlier, our Daily Bread says, when three young men named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego faced a similar threat, they answered, O Nebuchadnezzar, our king whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king, but if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods. They write, a similar experience between but two different outcomes. Polycarp was burned alive, but Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego left the furnace unsinged. Two different results, but the same display of faith. These men showed us that faith in God is not simply faith in what God can do, but it's the belief that God is God, whether he delivers us or not. He has the final say, and it is our decision to choose to follow him through it all. Yeah, I like that. So, how do you think the king would respond to what our friends have said? What's going to happen to these three little worms that won't go along and bow down to this new one world religion? Let's have a look. Verses 19 to 23. Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude towards them changed. He ordered the furnace heated seven times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace, and the king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace. So how would Nebuchadnezzar respond? Well, not well, you could say. He was not used to this open disobedience, and he responded by first getting seven times hotter himself before heating the furnace up by the same amount and throwing our three friends in alive. Did I say he didn't respond well? It's about now that we should be reminded that God's ways are not often our ways. You can probably imagine the prayer group kind of leaping into action as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are before the king. I mean, if you were a fly on the wall, you might have heard something like this. The prayer group praying, "O Lord, we beseech thee, change Nebuchadnezzar's heart." And God replying, "No." And the prayer group, "O Lord, don't let your faithful servants be thrown in the fire. Please think of their families." And God saying, "I want them thrown in the fire." And the prayer group, "O Lord, they're getting close. I command the flames to be gone in Jesus' name." And God saying, "My child, it is my will and desire that they go through the flames. I have something for them, but it is only found in the midst of the fire." If you think about it, probably 95% of our prayer life is just sort of spent telling God what he should do. And yeah, part of prayer is presenting our requests to God with thanksgiving. But always remember that God sees things from a far higher, far better vantage point than we do. So don't be surprised if his thoughts are not, initially at least, your thoughts. So God didn't take the fire away. He can, and he sometimes does, but in my experience of my, 35 years now as a Christian, he normally and usually has a purpose in allowing people to go through the fire. So let's have a look at that very purpose. I mean, how did things end? Well, I think you know, but let's just pretend that you don't. So verses 24 and 25, it says, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement, and he asked his advisers, 'Weren't there three men that were tied up and thrown into the fire?' And they replied, 'Certainly, O king.' And he said, 'Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, unbound, unharmed, and the fourth is like a son of the gods.'" So, what a result. I mean, this is a direct fulfillment of Isaiah 43:2, where the flames didn't even touch them. The prophet Isaiah had said this. He said, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. And when you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze." The book of Hebrews also picks up on the story, and it speaks of those who through faith shut the mouths of lions and quenched the fury of the flames. So that is speaking of this event and also Daniel's sleepover with the lions that will come later in chapter 6. The only thing actually burnt by the flames were the soldiers who threw these Jewish boys in and the ropes that the king had used to bind our three friends. I mean, that is so like God for you. He often uses a nasty trial to set us free from the things that would seek to bind us. But not a hair on the head of our boys was singed. And notice why they were able to come through this fiery trial intact. Because one said to be like a son of the gods was with them. Yes, Nebuchadnezzar, he is the actual Son of God. He is Jesus who is with his people through their trials, and that is the only reason the flames didn't burn these Jewish men. It is truly an amazing scene. So given that God allowed them to go into the furnace, what was the purpose for the flames? Firstly, it was for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego themselves. They were able to experience the Lord. They were able to experience his protection, fellowship, and peace when circumstances would state otherwise. So think about your own life. I mean, I would suspect that the times when you have experienced God the most have come in the midst of fiery ordeals. That's certainly true as I look back over my Christian life. And secondly, there was a purpose also for Nebuchadnezzar and all those looking on. Nebuchadnezzar had specifically asked, well, gloated, "And what God is able to save you from my hand?" Well, now he knows. He's been put in his place. And all that looked on got to see that with the God of Israel, you could go through the fire and not be burned. They got to see that these Jewish men were upheld, unbound and free. They got to see that someone who they said was like a son of the gods was with them. Yeah, he is the Son of God. So never underestimate God's desire to actually witness to others as well when you go through a fiery ordeal. He has a purpose for not only you, but also for those watching on around you. And then we read in verse 26, it says, "Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace, and he shouted, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here.' But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego yelled back, saying, 'Na, na, 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 na. How about you come in where we are?'" Okay, that's not their real response, and that's not the actual verse. But it would have been a good one. Here is their real response. It says, "So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisers crowded around them, and they saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their head singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. And then Nebuchadnezzar said, 'Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way.' And then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon." Nebuchadnezzar was obviously and rightfully blown away. He probably couldn't believe his eyes, but one thing he knew for sure is that the God of these boys was unlike any other god that he had come across before. First, this Jewish God had been able to declare and interpret his dream without him saying it. And now he was able to cause the fire to not singe a single hair on their head. So the king correctly declares that no other God can save in this way. Blown away. So I guess as we conclude this message, what have we seen? We've seen that this chapter is all about the image, the furnace, and the fourth man. Firstly, the image. We've seen that the king set up this 30-meter golden image, commanded every nation to come and bow before it. And we saw that things can actually change very quickly in this world, and sometimes these changes put the Christian in conflict with the rules of the land. We saw that it's also a prophetic pointer to what will happen in the last days, during the tribulation period, when a world ruler will set up another image and demand worship as God. Secondly, we've seen the furnace. We've seen that though the consequences for disobeying the king were to lose your life, these three Jewish boys were resolved and wouldn't go against their faith. You know, thus they were able to stand firm against the king, knowing that God could deliver them if he willed. But, and always remember this but if not, they would still not compromise their faith, They would place the situation in God's hands and trust the outcome to His knowledge and care. And we can all learn from that in any fiery encounter that we have. And thirdly, the fourth man. We've seen that there was one with these boys through their trial, one like the Son of God's. Yeah, Jesus. He was with them, protecting them, ensuring that they would not be harmed. And both the boys themselves and all looking on were able to learn so much through this experience. That was the reason that God allowed the furnace and the flames, as He can in our lives, but always so that good would eventuate. And so, we leave our three friends having received a job promotion. From zero to hero, you might say, straight from the depths of the fire and into a new role ruling over the provinces of Babylon. Not bad, but would it last? Unfortunately, as we shall see in the next chapter, the king still isn't as impressed with the God of Israel as he is with the king of Babylon. Yeah, himself. Oh, mankind, when will you ever learn? Well, that's for the next study. The king will have to learn, and not the easy way, as we shall see. So thank you once again. May God bless your time with him, and hopefully you can tune in next time for chapter 4, another really interesting chapter in this wonderful book of Daniel. May God bless you.